What is Theosophy? By H. P. Blavatsky. From The Theosophist, Volume 1, 1879. This question has been so often asked, and misconceptions so widely prevails, that the editors of a journal devoted to an exposition of the world's theosophy would be remiss were its first number issued without coming to a full understanding with their readers. But our heading involves two further queries. What is the Theosophical Society, and what are the Theosophists? To each an answer will be given. According to lexicographers, the term Theosophia is composed of two Greek words, Theos, God, and Sophos, wise. So far, correct. But the explanations that follow are far from giving a clear idea of Theosophy. Webster defines it most originally as a supposed intercourse with God and superior spirits, and consequent attainment of superhuman knowledge, by physical processes, as by the theurgic operations of some ancient Platonists, or by the chemical processes of the German fire philosophers. This, to say the least, is a poor and flippant explanation. To attribute such ideas to men like Ammonius Saccas, Plotinus, Iamblichus, Porphyry, Proclus, shows either intentional misrepresentation, or Mr. Webster's ignorance of the philosophy and motives of the greatest geniuses of the later Alexandrian school. To impute to those whom their contemporaries as well as posterity styled theodidactoi, God taught, a purpose to develop their psychological, spiritual perceptions by physical processes, is to describe them as materialists. As to the concluding fling at the fire philosophers, it rebounds from them to fall home among our most eminent modern men of science, those, in whose mouths the Reverend James Martineau places the following boast. Matter is all we want, give us atoms alone, and we will explain the universe. Vaughan offers a far better, more philosophical definition. A theosophist, he says, is one who gives you a theory of God or the works of God, which has not revelation, but an inspiration of his own for its basis. In this view every great thinker and philosopher, especially every founder of a new religion, school of philosophy, or sect, is necessarily a theosophist. Hence, theosophy and theosophists have existed ever since the first glimmering of nascent thought made man seek instinctively for the means of expressing his own independent opinions. There were theosophists before the Christian era, notwithstanding that the Christian writers ascribe the development of the eclectic theosophical system to the early part of the 3rd century of their era. Diogenes Laertius traces theosophy to an epoch antedating the dynasty of the Ptolemies, and names as its founder an Egyptian hierophant called Pot-Amun, the name being Coptic and signifying a priest consecrated to Amun, the god of wisdom. But history shows it revived by Ammonius Saccas, the founder of the Neoplatonic school. He and his disciples called themselves Philalethians, lovers of the truth, while others termed them the analogists, on account of their method of interpreting all sacred legends, symbolical myths and mysteries, by a rule of analogy or correspondence, so that events which had occurred in the external world were regarded as expressing operations and experiences of the human soul. It was the aim and purpose of Ammonius to reconcile all sects, peoples and nations under one common faith, a belief in one supreme eternal, unknown, and unnamed power, governing the universe by immutable and eternal laws. His object was to prove a primitive system of theosophy, which at the beginning was essentially alike in all countries, to induce all men to lay aside their strifes and quarrels, and unite in purpose and thought as the children of one common mother, to purify the ancient religions, by degrees corrupted and obscured, from all dross of human element, by uniting and expounding them upon pure philosophical principles. Hence, the Buddhistic, Vedantic and Magian, or Zoroastrian systems were taught in the eclectic theosophical school along with all the philosophies of Greece. Hence also, that preeminently Buddhistic and Indian feature among the ancient theosophists of Alexandria, of due reverence for parents and aged persons, a fraternal affection for the whole human race, and a compassionate feeling for even the dumb animals. While seeking to establish a system of moral discipline which enforced upon people the duty to live according to the laws of their respective countries, to exalt their minds by the research and contemplation of the one absolute truth, his chief object in order, as he believed, to achieve all others, was to extract from the various religious teachings, as from a many-chorded instrument, one full and harmonious melody, which would find response in every truth-loving heart. Theosophy is then, the archaic wisdom religion, the esoteric doctrine once known in every ancient country having claims to civilization. This wisdom all the old writings show us as an emanation of the divine principle, and the clear comprehension of it is typified in such names as the Indian Buddha, the Babylonian Nebo, the Thoth of Memphis, the Hermes of Greece, in the appellations, also of some goddesses, Metis, Natha, Athena, the Gnostic Sophia, and finally, the Vedas, from the word to know. Under this designation, all the ancient philosophers of the East and West, the Hierophants of Old Egypt, the Rishis of Aryavart, the Theodoductoi of Greece, included all knowledge of things occult and essentially divine. The Merkava of the Hebrew rabbis, the secular and popular series, were thus designated as only the vehicle, the outward shell which contained the higher esoteric knowledges. The Magi of Zoroaster received instruction and were initiated in the caves and secret lodges of Bactria, the Egyptian and Grecian Hierophants had their aporita, or secret discourses, during which the Mista became an epopta, a seer. The central idea of the eclectic theosophy was that of a single supreme essence, unknown and unknowable. 4. How could one know the knower? As inquires Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Their system was characterized by three distinct features: the theory of the above-named essence, the doctrine of the human soul, an emanation from the latter, hence of the same nature, and its theurgy. It is this last science which has led the Neoplatonists to be so misrepresented in our era of materialistic science. Theurgy being essentially the art of applying the divine powers of man to the subordination of the blind forces of nature, its votaries were first termed magicians, a corruption of the word mag, signifying a wise, or learned man, and derided. Skeptics of a century ago would have been as wide of the mark if they had laughed at the idea of a phonograph or telegraph. The ridiculed and the infidels of one generation generally become the wise men and saints of the next. As regards the divine essence and the nature of the soul and spirit, modern theosophy believes now as ancient theosophy did. The popular Diu of the Aryan nations was identical with the Iao of the Chaldeans, and even with the Jupiter of the less learned and philosophical among the Romans, and it was just as identical with the Yahweh of the Samaritans, the Tiu or Diusko of the Northmen, the Diu of the Britons, and the Zeus of the Thracians. As to the absolute essence, the one and all, whether we accept the Greek Pythagorean, the Chaldean Kabbalistic, or the Aryan philosophy in regard to it, it will all lead to one and the same result. The primeval monad of the Pythagorean system, which retires into darkness and is itself darkness, for human intellect, was made the basis of all things, and we can find the idea in all its integrity in the philosophical systems of Leibniz and Spinoza. Therefore, whether a theosophist agrees with the Kabbalah which, speaking of Ensof, propounds the query, who then, can comprehend it, since it is formless, and non-existent? Or, remembering that magnificent hymn from the Rig Veda, hymn 129, book 10th, inquire, quote, who knows from whence this great creation sprang? Whether his will created or was mute? He knows it, or perchance even he knows not. End quote. Or again, accepts the Vedantic conception of Brahma, who in the Upanishads is represented as without life, without mind, pure, unconscious, for Brahma is absolute consciousness. Or, even finally, siding with the Svabhavikas of Nepal, maintains that nothing exists but svabhavat, substance or nature, which exists by itself without any creator, any one of the above conceptions can lead but to pure and absolute theosophy. That theosophy which prompted such men as Hegel, Fichte and Spinoza to take up the labors of the old Grecian philosophers and speculate upon the one substance, the deity, the divine all proceeding from the divine wisdom, incomprehensible, unknown and unnamed, by any ancient or modern religious philosophy, with the exception of Christianity and Mohammedanism. Every theosophist then, holding to a theory of the deity which has not revelation, but an inspiration of his own for its basis, may accept any of the above definitions or belong to any of these religions, and yet remain strictly within the boundaries of theosophy. For the latter is belief in the deity as the all, the source of all existence, the infinite that cannot be either comprehended or known, the universe alone revealing it, or as some prefer it, him, thus giving a sex to that, to anthropomorphize which is blasphemy. True, theosophy shrinks from brutal materialization. It prefers believing that, from eternity retired within itself, the spirit of the deity neither wills nor creates. But that, from the infinite effulgency everywhere going forth from the great center, that which produces all visible and invisible things, is but a ray containing in itself the generative and conceptive power, which in its turn, produces that which the Greeks called macrocosm, the Kabbalists Tikkun or Adam Kadmon, the archetypal man, and the Aryans Purusha, the manifested Brahm, or the divine male. Theosophy believes also in the anastasis or continued existence, and in transmigration, evolution, or a series or changes in the soul which can be defended and explained on strict philosophical principles, and only by making a distinction between Paramatma, transcendental, supreme soul, and Jivatma, animal, or conscious soul, of the Vedantins. Footnote. In a series of articles entitled The World's Great Theosophists, we intend showing that from Pythagoras, who got his wisdom in India, down to our best-known modern philosophers and theosophists, David Hume, and Shelley, the English poet, the Spiritists of France included, many believed and yet believe in metempsychosis or reincarnation of the soul, however unelaborated the system of the Spiritists may fairly be regarded. End footnote. To fully define theosophy, we must consider it under all its aspects. The interior world has not been hidden from all by impenetrable darkness. By that higher intuition acquired by Theosophia, or God knowledge, which carried the mind from the world of form into that of formless spirit, man has been sometimes enabled in every age and every country to perceive things in the interior or invisible world. Hence, the samadhi, or dhyan yoga samadhi, of the Hindu ascetics, the daimonlan phodi, or spiritual illumination of the Neoplatonists, the sidereal confabulation of soul, of the Rosicrucians or fire philosophers, and even the ecstatic trance of mystics and of the modern mesmerists and spiritualists, are identical in nature, though various as to manifestation. The search after man's diviner self, so often and so erroneously interpreted as individual communion with a personal God, was the object of every mystic, and belief in its possibility seems to have been coeval with the genesis of humanity, each people giving it another name. Thus Plato and Plotinus call noetic work that which the yogas and the Kshatriya term vidya. By reflection, self-knowledge and intellectual discipline, the soul can be raised to the vision of eternal truth, goodness, and beauty, that is, to the vision of God. This is the epopteia, said the Greeks. To unite one's soul to the universal soul, says Porphyry, requires but a perfectly pure mind. Through self-contemplation, perfect chastity, and purity of body, we may approach nearer to it, and receive in that state, true knowledge and wonderful insight. And Swami Sarasvati, who has read neither Porphyry nor other Greek authors, but who is a thorough Vedic scholar, says in his Veda Bhashya, to obtain Diksha, highest initiations, and yoga, one has to practice according to the rules. The soul in human body can perform the greatest wonders by knowing the universal spirit, or God, and acquainting itself with the properties and qualities, occult, of all the things in the universe. A human being, a dikshit or initiate, can thus acquire a power of seeing and hearing at great distances. Finally, Alfred R. Wallace, FRS, a spiritualist and yet a confessedly great naturalist, says, with brave candor, quote, "It is spirit that alone feels, and perceives, and thinks, that acquires knowledge, and reasons and aspires. There not unfrequently occur individuals so constituted that the spirit can perceive independently of the corporeal organs of sense, or can perhaps, wholly or partially, quit the body for a time and return to it again. The spirit communicates with spirit easier than with matter. End quote. We can now see how, after thousands of years have intervened between the age of the gymnosophists and our own highly civilized era, notwithstanding, or perhaps, just because of such an enlightenment which pours its radiant light upon the psychological as well as upon the physical realms of nature, over 20 millions of people today believe, under a different form, in those same spiritual powers that were believed in by the yogins and the Pythagoreans, nearly 3,000 years ago. Thus, while the Aryan mystic claimed for himself the power of solving all the problems of life and death, when he had once obtained the power of acting independently of his body, through the Atman, self, or soul, and the old Greeks went in search of Atmu, the hidden one, or the God soul of man, with the symbolical mirror of the Thesmophorian mysteries. So the spiritualists of today believe in the faculty of the spirits, or the souls of the disembodied persons, to communicate visibly and tangibly with those they loved on earth. And all these, Aryan yogis, Greek philosophers, and modern spiritualists, affirmed that possibility on the ground that the embodied soul and its never-embodied spirits, the real self, are not separated from either the universal soul or other spirits by space, but merely by the differentiation of their qualities, as in the boundless expanse of the universe there can be no limitation. And that when this difference is once removed, according to the Greeks and Aryans by abstract contemplation, producing the temporary liberation of the imprisoned soul, and according to spiritualists, through mediumship, such an union between embodied and disembodied spirits becomes possible. Thus was it that Patanjali's yogis, and following in their steps, Plotinus, Porphyry and other Neoplatonists, maintained that in their hours of ecstasy, they had been united to, or rather become as one with, God, several times during the course of their lives. This idea, erroneous as it may seem in its application to the universal spirit, was, and is, claimed by too many great philosophers to be put aside as entirely chimerical. In the case of the Theodoductoi, the only controvertible point, the dark spot on this philosophy of extreme mysticism, was its claim to include that which is simply ecstatic illumination, under the head of sensuous perception. In the case of the yogins, who maintained their ability to see Ishvara face to face, this claim was successfully overthrown by the stern logic of Kapila. As to the similar assumption made for their Greek followers, for a long array of Christian ecstatics, and finally, for the last two claimants to God seeing within these last 100 years, Jakob Burma and Swedenborg, this pretension would and should have been philosophically and logically questioned, if a few of our great men of science who are spiritualists had had more interest in the philosophy than in the mere phenomenalism of spiritualism. Footnote on gymnosophists. The reality of the yog power was affirmed by many Greek and Roman writers, who call the yogins Indian gymnosophists, by Strabo, Lucan, Plutarch, Cicero, or Tusculum, Pliny, 7, 2, etc. End footnote. The Alexandrian theosophists were divided into neophytes, initiates, and masters, or hierophants, and their rules were copied from the ancient mysteries of Orpheus, who according to Herodotus, brought them from India. Ammonius obligated his disciples by oath not to divulge his higher doctrines, except to those who were proved thoroughly worthy and initiated, and who had learned to regard the gods, the angels, and the demons of other peoples, according to the esoteric hyponia, or under meaning. The gods exist, but they are not what the hoi polloi, the uneducated multitude, suppose them to be, says Epicurus. He is not an atheist who denies the existence of the gods whom the multitude worship, but he is such who fastens on these gods the opinions of the multitude. In his turn, Aristotle declares that of the divine essence pervading the whole world of nature, what are styled the gods are simply the first principles. Plotinus, the pupil of the god taught Ammonius, tells us that the secret gnosis or the knowledge of theosophy has 3 degrees, opinion, science, and illumination. The means or instrument of the first is sense, or perception, of the second, dialectics, of the third, intuition. To the last, reason is subordinate, it is absolute knowledge, founded on the identification of the mind with the object known. Theosophy is the exact science of psychology, so to say, it stands in relation to natural, uncultivated mediumship, as the knowledge of a Tyndall stands to that of a schoolboy in physics. It develops in man a direct beholding, that which Schelling denominates a realization of the identity of subject and object in the individual, so that under the influence and knowledge of hyponeia, man thinks divine thoughts, views all things as they really are, and finally, becomes recipient of the soul of the world, to use one of the finest expressions of Emerson. "I, the imperfect, adore my own perfect," he says in his superb essay on the Oversoul. Besides this psychological, or soul state, Theosophy cultivated every branch of sciences and arts. It was thoroughly familiar with what is now commonly known as mesmerism. Practical theurgy or ceremonial magic, so often resorted to in their exorcisms by the Roman Catholic clergy, was discarded by the Theosophists. It is but Iamblichus alone who, transcending the other eclectics, added to Theosophy the doctrine of theurgy. When ignorant of the true meaning of the esoteric divine symbols of nature, man is apt to miscalculate the powers of his soul, and instead of communing spiritually and mentally with the higher, celestial beings, the good spirits, the gods of the theurgists of the Platonic school, he will unconsciously call forth the evil dark powers which lurk around humanity, the undying, grim creations of human crimes and vices. And thus fall from theurgia, or white magic, into goetia, or black magic, sorcery. Yet, neither white nor black magic are what popular superstition understands by the terms. The possibility of raising spirit according to the key of Solomon is the height of superstition and ignorance. Purity of deed and thought can alone raise us to an intercourse with the gods and attain for us the goal we desire. Alchemy, believed by so many to have been a spiritual philosophy as well as a physical science, belonged to the teachings of the Theosophical school. It is a noticeable fact that neither Zoroaster, Buddha, Orpheus, Pythagoras, Confucius, Socrates, nor Ammonius Saccas, committed anything to writing. The reason for it is obvious. Theosophy is a double-edged weapon and unfit for the ignorant or the selfish. Like every ancient philosophy, it has its votaries among the moderns, but until late in our own days, its disciples were few in numbers, and of the most various sects and opinions. Entirely speculative, and founding no schools, they have still exercised a silent influence upon philosophy, and no doubt, when the time arrives, many ideas thus silently propounded may yet give new directions to human thought, remarks Mr. Kenneth R. H. Mackenzie, 9th degree. Himself a mystic and a theosophist, in his large and valuable work, The Royal Masonic Cyclopedia, Articles Theosophical Society of New York and Theosophy, page 731. Since the days of the fire philosophers, they had never formed themselves into societies, for, tracked like wild beasts by the Christian clergy, to be known as a theosophist often amounted, hardly a century ago, to a death warrant. The statistics show that, during a period of 150 years, no less than 90,000 men and women were burned in Europe for alleged witchcraft. In Great Britain only, from AD 1640 to 1660, but 20 years, 3,000 persons were put to death for compact with the devil. It was but late in the present century, in 1875, that some progressed mystics and spiritualists, unsatisfied with the theories and explanations of spiritualism, started by its votaries, and finding that they were far from covering the whole ground of the wide range of phenomena, formed at New York, America, an association which is now widely known as the Theosophical Society.